Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Ian Tuttle of National Review in for Jim Garrity once again today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives as usual. And Ian, this isn't the strongest all-time good martini, but considering the source, it's pretty darn good. First of all, it's MSNBC. Secondly, it's Howard Dean. And so Joe Scarborough was talking to Howard Dean today on Morning Joe, and apparently Joe Scarborough has a new game called Why Am I Wrong? And today it dealt with the U.S. role at these nuclear talks with Iran. Here's how that conversation went.
I'm going to say something, and you tell me why I'm wrong. I think John Kerry and Barack Obama are far, far too eager for a deal with Iran and could actually get a better deal if they walked away from the table and possibly came back later. Why am I wrong, Howard?
I actually think you're right about
Damn!
That.
Damn! I can't get anybody to play this game.
I think you're wrong.
I tell you why.
Okay, tell me why, Howard.
Because, I think the United States is negotiating from a much stronger position than we were 4 years ago.
Exactly.
And the reason for that is these guys are desperate to get rid of the sanctions.
So the logic's not that great there. I think we are more probably desperate than the Iranians at this point, but we shouldn't be. And kudos to Howard Dean and Joe Scarborough for recognizing that.
You know, he goes a little bit off the tracks there later in that segment, but it is a good thing to have a Democrat who, even if he's not an elected official or sort of in the leadership structure of the party anymore, is certainly a prominent member of the party, was DNC chairman, as late as I think 2009, come out and say that that they should walk away. Now, Dean, of course, with all Democrats, thinks that a deal with Iran is the way to go. But it's an important observation to make that effectively the White House has put itself in a position of weakness as far as these negotiations go, and would do itself a huge favor to let Iran know that it is capable of walking away. And I think that's a very important point that's been lost on this White House, is Iran knows that Obama and Kerry are desperate for a deal. They're just begging for one. And so they're not willing to walk away. And that means that Iran can continue to push and push and push. And that's part of the reason that we've seen the White House cave continually on almost every sort of clause of a potential deal. So I'm not used to saying this, but I think Howard Dean has offered good advice, even though I think they should probably walk away from a deal permanently. To walk away now would be a significant move, and even if they were to come back, would force Iran to recognize that they don't hold all the cards. That would at least be a small step forward.
Yeah, it would seem to be in the right direction. We should point out that three of the permanent five plus one have already gone home from these talks, that being the Russians, Chinese, and French, although the Russians and Chinese probably don't really care if Iran has the bomb, since the Russians helped them get it or put them on the path to getting it. And here's the fun exit on this one, Ian. This is a statement from the talks about where negotiations stand, because the U.S. and the British are still there hammering things out, they hope, with the Iranians. Negotiators have a tentative agreement on the rough outline of a possible public statement on the progress they have made so far that would also highlight areas of disagreement, diplomats close to the talks said. Wow, concrete there.
If you need one sentence to sum up the state of negotiations over an Iranian nuclear weapon, that's the one.
Let's move on to the bad martini now. And this is no April Fool's joke. If you haven't paid your taxes, you've got about 2 weeks left to do it. Tax day just 14 days away. And if you have some problems filling out your taxes, good luck getting help from the IRS. This is from the Washington Times. IRS Commissioner John Koskinen said Tuesday that service at his agency has gotten so bad that they are ignoring more than 60% of taxpayers' phone calls during this tax season. Speaking at the National Press Club, Mr. Koskinen pleaded for more money, saying a budget boost would help them staff their overwhelmed customer service lines. He also said it would help reverse staffing cuts in their compliance division, where he said the government will lose $2 billion this year in money it would otherwise have been able to collect if it had better staffing. Classic Washington excuse there, Ian. We would have done a better job if only we had more money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This is exactly the Washington strategy. If something's going wrong, we need to pour more money into it. It's really extraordinary. The IRS is one of the most disliked and unlikable agencies in all of Washington. Over the past couple of years, they've proved that at least the nonprofit division is one of the most utterly corrupt, and now they're pleading for more money. This issue of answering phone calls raises something else, which is a sort of clever thing, I think. Anyone who has called your own cell phone provider or an IT line or something like this, we'll get that message. You know, we're experiencing a high volume of phone calls at the moment. Please hold on. Your call is important to us, et cetera. It just so happens that, AT&T or whomever it may be, is experiencing a high volume of phone calls always. Whether you call it at 9 in the morning or 2 a.m., there's always a high volume of phone calls. Part of it is that this is an automated response that is designed to encourage people to give up. That reduces the stress on the company's lines, and it increases the likelihood that you'll just sort of pay. You'll just sort of suffer through. The exact same thing happens in government and happens far more regularly. What we're seeing in the IRS is not a staffing issue. It's a response of government agencies that are famously inept, famously lazy, are not interested, and have no incentive to help out the taxpayer. I know there are a lot of good people doing good work in all sorts of government bureaucracies, but it's impossible to look at the various agencies and departments in government and looking responsibly at them and say that they're doing anything but really trying to protect themselves.
On to the crazy martini now. And never before, Ian, do I think there's been such a kerfuffle over who will host a fake news show. But that seems to be the case with the hire that Comedy Central made of Trevor Noah to replace Jon Stewart later this year. The announcement came, I believe, on Monday, and there was much fanfare. And then all of a sudden, somebody actually bothered to look at the guy's Twitter account. And if there had just been one or two tweets that were, critical of Israel, it probably wouldn't have gotten too much of a response. But let's just take a look at some of these here. He says, South Africans know how to recycle like Israel knows how to be peaceful. And then he says, behind every successful rap billionaire is a double as rich Jewish man. He goes on to say, he's talking about soccer here, Messi gets the ball and the real players try to foul him, but Messi doesn't go down easy, just like Jewish chicks. And then the one that I think is getting the most attention, almost bumped a Jewish kid crossing the road. He didn't look before crossing, but I still would have felt so bad in my German car. And then there's another thing found on his Facebook page of him attending what appears to be an anti-Israel rally in front of the White House. So interesting that there wasn't more of a background check here, but perhaps the most fascinating thing, Ian, is that most of the criticism of this guy is coming from the left.
This is sort of a fantastically delicious moment. When Noah was selected, two things that stick out in my mind. One was something over, I believe it was at Vox. Someone wrote, I only hope that we can be deserving of him as a host, which is just a perfect reversal of the entertainer audience dynamic. The second is over at Salon, where someone wrote that they fully expected a backlash from the right since Trevor Noah was a black man, a product of apartheid. Naturally, conservatives would be merciless. And what we've seen is the exact opposite. In fact, one of the first and most indignant pieces came from Salon. So if you were to look at their website yesterday, you would see something about how Trevor Noah is great. And then two stories down, did Trevor Noah just doom himself? There are a couple things worth saying here. One is, most of these tweets are old, and they are troubling to those of us with particular sensibilities. But the fact is that at the heart of it, they're just not very funny. And a lot of people have pointed that out on the right, that this is part of comedy. Is one of my colleagues here at National Review, Kat Timpf, wrote about this yesterday. Part of the reality of being a stand-up comedian, which Noah is trying out a whole lot of things. And for young comedians and bad comedians, part of their shtick is just often crossing lines and seeing how far they can get. So it seems like Noah did that on Twitter, just sort of pushing against sensitive subjects and seeing if they stuck. So there's a real sort of misunderstanding, I think, about that on the left. The second thing is the outrage is very strange because part of it is another set of tweets from Noah were sort of vaguely anti-women, talking about, you know, fat chicks and this sort of thing. A lot of that got attention. That is just enormously outrageous to the left, to the aggressive feminism, the sort of characteristic of that side of the aisle. And the Israel tweets and the tweets about Jews, which are enormously troubling to us on the right because they seem to fit into the image that we have of the left as largely almost universally anti-Israel and often anti-Semitic, have gained a lot less attention because that sentiment, the left is really sort of broadly willing to excuse because most of them accept it. So all of this is to say what you've seen with this episode of outrage over Trevor Noah is just the extraordinary inconsistency of any sort of principled idea of free speech or comedy or any of this when it comes to the left. What it all boils down to is they hate certain things, they love other things, and they'll attack you for one and defend you on the other. And there's no sort of rhyme or reason other than that's the fad of the moment. Trevor Noah just found that out the hard way.
There's a conservative radio host here in D.C. who has the quip that if it wasn't for double standards, the left would have no standards at all. So
precisely.
I think that fits in pretty well here. Ian, great as always. Have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks. You too, Greg.
Ian Tuttle of National Review. And for Jim Garrity, I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And join us again on Thursday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.